G'day Cubs fans from all around the world. This is Dallas from Sydney, Australia, and this episode is brought to you by proud Patreon supporters just like me. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the best marginal analysis and some cracking internet muscle flexes. This is the Ivy Envy Podcast. Go Cubs!
Hi, and thanks for downloading this episode of the Ivy Envy Podcast. We're talking about the NLDS between the Cubs and Giants in this episode. Obviously, what else would we be talking about? We are recapping Game 2 and previewing Game 3. I'm one of your co-hosts. My name is Corey, and I am joined by one other host of this podcast tonight.
Hey, yeah, what's up, buddy? It's Kurt.
Andy. Yeah,
Andy.
How about that? Okay, let's get... I kind of feel like my voice is maybe at like 85% right now. So we should you know, kind of explain, I guess. The three of us were at last night's game at Wrigley, yep. Game 2. We were there. Andy, so I don't know if it's because it's his birthday today, he decided he wanted the day off, or I don't know if he physically is unable to speak because last night Andy was physically unable to speak.
Yeah, he was physically unable to speak by about like the fourth, maybe fifth inning. He and I were standing next to each other in standing room, and it just went all at once, and then we didn't speak again for probably six innings. You know, he's making notes on the iPhone to me about things he needed to say, which was pretty
things.
You know, Andy's a pretty quiet guy, but not that quiet. So yeah, he couldn't even muster a sound from the voice. And
right, so I want to play I took a Snapchat video of Andy last night after the game, and I'm going to play that real quick. So here it is.
What'd you think about that game?
I thought it was really fun. I'm really glad the Cubs won.
Yeah, that was pretty fantastic. So any of you who were you know, had tickets to the hapless captain world tour, that unfortunately he's gonna have to postpone some tour dates because of the vocal strain. I mean, his people will get with you on makeup dates, but
right,
yeah, he's gonna be out for a bit,
which, so, yeah,
about that.
So it's kind of surprising that he lost his voice, because I was at Game 4 with Andy. We also went to Game 2 last year in LDS. We went to Game 2 and Game 4. He didn't lose his voice in either of those games. And seemed like games, I guess, that would have maybe caused a more vocal strain than last night's game. But he lost it, you said, in the fourth inning. And then, like,
was it the fourth? He scored the three runs.
I think that was the third, okay. Second. That was the second, then. I think. We should know that since we were at the game, but I think it was the second.
Yeah, well, that's probably what started it. We did a fair amount of yelling. It was fun. We had a good time.
Yeah,
it was silent.
Yeah, and it definitely was a second, because I did it off Samardzija, and
that's right.
He only lasted two innings. So, so people around him, even though he had lost his voice, people around him continued to talk to him.
Well, yeah, I mean, people around us. Well, I mean that was those were the kind of people that would talk to a wall. I think the two guys were like, one was like, "Oh, hey Al, who's that warming up? Is that Strop or Rondon?" You know, I mean, those were our neighbors, and then it was like Montgomery, both.
Yeah. Well, they look so similar.
White and left-handed. Is Strappy? I don't even know. And then there's, 50-foot video board right above them says warming. So yeah, those were our neighbors. So those guys and their friends would just talk to Andy, and Andy would be like, "I can't talk. I have no voice." So he's actually writing notes on his iPhone to the people. and holding it up to their faces like, this is what's happening.
Yeah. Oh, that's so
and at one point they're asking us like, what happened to Hendricks? Is he still in? I'm like, no, he's been out for two innings.
Remember that long delay when the trainers came out?
Well, that's when they were getting more beer.
Oh, good.
So, I mean, which was like every 30 seconds, it seemed like. But at the same time, I mean, they actually were pretty nice people. It's fun to make fun of them, but
yeah, you
know, they're pretty harmless, pretty nice people. And we had such a good time.
Yeah. So I was separated from Andy and Kurt. I was with my daughter. And so we were over on the other side of the ballpark. We had pretty decent people around us. We had a lady next to us that was just brutal, brutal. She just yelled the entire time, yelled every pitch and stupid stuff like, and she covered her mouth to make it louder, you know, to like project it, but it just muffled it. And it was like, pitch him the ball. Like, that's the kind of stuff she was yelling. Pitch him a good one. it was so annoying. And so I looked over at Tegan and I was kind of like laughing about it, you know, we were kind of joking and Tegan's like, and she can't even dance right. No, she can't.
What makes it worse?
Yeah, she could not even dance
right.
Yep. So so we were able to go to this game because of a listener guy from Oklahoma. He hooked us up with tickets. And so I guess I figured that everyone listening to this episode was able to watch the game or listen to the game, but the vast majority of you were not able to attend these games at Wrigley. So I thought we could kind of focus on the things that we experienced there, not necessarily the people around us, but the vibe in Wrigley and everything. And I do want to talk about a few things about game two, but Kurt, how would you describe the feeling first around like in Wrigleyville, in the neighborhood, and then in the ballpark?
Oh man, it was jumping. I mean, it was everything I expected it to be, and then a little bit more. I mean, so many people, massive humanity, everybody in good spirits. And then once we got in and things got rolling, it was a little quiet at first when we got in, because we got in really early because we had standing room. But once things got in, I mean, just buzzing, everything, something good happened. It just erupted. And this was my first playoff experience at Wrigley, and it lived up to everything I expected just because it was so lively. And this is a game that had a good stretch of pretty, I don't want to call it boring, but there was that stretch where nothing happened after they scored all those runs and,
right,
you know, innings of good pitching and not a lot of offense. And it still just felt a lot of energy and it's hard to describe because it was so amazing.
Yeah, I thought that the crowd or the vibe around Wrigleyville, both outside and inside, it was not as cautious as what I saw when I was at game four of the NLDS last year when the Cubs eliminated the Cardinals. We didn't walk around Wrigleyville very much that night. We kind of like got our parking and then just went right into the ballpark. This time I actually walked down Clark to eat. I took my daughter to a place to eat and like, I mean, just the few blocks south of Wrigley, were just packed. I mean, bars, every bar had people waiting in line to get in. Some bars, I would say like Sluggers probably had 100 people outside in line trying to get in. And so, I mean, the bars were just packed, but not as like nervous as, what I remember last year. It seemed like people were in good, like you mentioned, Kurt, in good spirits. People were excited. People were optimistic, and it wasn't that like, I think that, at times there's elements of like the doomsday type stuff. Or like Eeyore, you know, a bunch of Eeyores. It wasn't like that at all. But not only was it like people didn't even seem nervous, and it was just like everyone was excited. This is such, you know, it's a team worth getting excited about. But you did mention the game. I mean, it was kind of a weird game. Things started off great. The Cubs jumped on Samardzija early. The crowd was really into it at that point. But then as the game got on, I kind of felt like we got lulled to sleep. I mean, it was just like, there wasn't a whole lot going on. But even then the people around us like didn't seem nervous. And I just didn't feel like the Giants would be able to mount a comeback. It just didn't seem like that was going to happen. Yeah. The Cubs bullpen was like fresh and effective. And that Giants offense, it's just not scary.
It's so weak. Yeah. Like you said, the bullpen was lights out, but it was lights out against just a lethargic offense. Just couldn't do anything.
And it's not even like, they just weren't like, they were kind of in a cold slump or cold streak or whatever. It was just like, you look at the lineup and it's like, how are they going to string together hits? You just didn't see it happening. You looked at the top of the order and you're like, okay, Belt, Posey, Pence,
Crawford,
like these, Crawford, and you're like, these guys could knock one out of the park at any moment, but it just didn't feel like that bottom half of the order was going to string enough hits together to kind of generate anything. It felt like people weren't really nervous because it was like, with a 5-2 lead and an offense that can just kind of like generate things. People weren't nervous and people were like remarkably calm. And
there was no real threat. I mean, the Giants just never threat. I mean, any of those guys could have popped a solo shot. They couldn't mount much on the bases. They got a guy here or there, but they just never felt threatened, and which was a good thing. I mean, I kind of enjoyed that, getting excited early and then seeing the bullpen. I mean, because I definitely got nervous when Hendricks left, and I thought, we could be in trouble.
I see, and I wasn't that nervous because I knew that
it was kind of irrational.
Well, and I just thought, the bullpen is so fresh; they haven't pitched in like a week, so. I just kind of felt like, he's got like the only bullpen guy that had been used was Chapman in an inning the night before. And so I thought, all these guys are fresh. They're all ready to go. And Madden can use any of them. Yep. There's no restrictions.
And then he ends up using them perfectly. Like when you might think,
of course he does.
In my head, the not manager head, I'm like, oh, maybe Montgomery comes in here. He throws three innings, however he's working. He's a lefty. It's a pretty left-handed lineup that works out. And then he brings in Wood. I'm like, oh, okay. But then it's like, oh, why did he bring Wood? Because he's due up. And then he hits a home run. And
that's exactly like, it. When Wood came in, I was like, huh, interesting. And then I looked at the scoreboard I looked at the lineup because I wasn't in. That's a different story, but I wasn't in the ballpark I was in the ballpark. I took my daughter to the restroom the half inning when Hendricks got hurt, but I looked and I saw that the pitcher's spot was coming up and I was like, oh yeah, Wood makes so much sense there because he can go multiple innings and he can hit, and man, did he hit.
And then he just went that inning and hit, and then you can,
and he was
replaced him.
Right. Yeah. So we actually got back to our seats as he hit the home run. So that was really exciting. But I guess, it just wasn't in the eighth when Rondon came in. I think people were kind of pumped to see him come in because I still think, he has closer type stuff. And with a little bit of shakiness there at the end of the season, I kind of felt like, okay, he's had a lot of rest and we're going to see his best. And he came in and he was pumping him in there at 96. Yeah. And I mean, he looked good. But even then, like on the second out, there was a lot of excitement in the crowd, but there wasn't like that whole half inning. There wasn't that much electricity. And I think, again, it was just because it wasn't a very tense situation. And 5-2 isn't a huge margin, but it just felt like it wasn't going to happen. Well, buying tickets online for these playoff games, I think it's kind of on the minds of everyone right now. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts, it's been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or that show that you want to go to. And none of the older ticket sites, they want to change that. They don't want to. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and they've created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. So getting selected for these Cubs playoff games, it's been a challenge. It's not been easy to do, and most people have not had good luck at doing that. And so SeatGeek is definitely the place. When people are asking me about tickets, I tell them to go to SeatGeek and look for playoff tickets. It's always the first place I go to look for tickets. I've got alerts set up for these playoff games so I can get alerts when prices drop to levels that I'm comfortable with, prices I'm comfortable with. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's super easy, and I would definitely suggest it here, as I'm sure, like most Cubs fans, you are considering trying to get to Wrigley Field for these games, or at least take one of these games in. So SeatGeek does all of the price comparison for you. They search multiple ticket sites to ensure that you get the best deal possible. And SeatGeek does all the work. They save you time and money, and they want to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You will immediately see any underpriced seats, and you'll be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. And best of all, our listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. So let us help you save $20 to go see the Cubs in the playoffs. To get your $20 rebate, download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and tap on add a promo code. Enter the promo code IVY, IVY, all capital letters, and SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code IVY today.
But before we move on off of last night, I did want to kind of share thoughts on if you get standing room tickets very, very briefly, because I know this isn't going to be relevant to everybody, but you don't have to get in like right away. There's plenty of time to stand because people show up late. That's number one. Number two, they're very finicky about where you stand. You kind of think about all the places you could stand at Wrigley, and it boils down to on the rail where there's no handicap area. You can't stand behind any of the handicap accessible areas. You can only stand outside of those areas, and then on the ramps on the 200 level where you could actually see the field. Those are the only places you could stand. They were very, very, very tight. Like, you couldn't even stand on the porch on the 200 level that was way off in left and right field. They have those like flat areas where you could go up and stand. Couldn't go up there. Find a spot early, but you know, you don't have to be in there at 2 hours before. At least we didn't. Find a good spot where you feel like you can see. And of course, you got a pretty limited window in the 200 level, but
which you even have a limited window in your seats in the 200 level, really.
Exactly. And it's challenging because, you know, when things get exciting, people stand up and then you can't see anything at all. You know, and I'm 6'5", I couldn't see anything. And none of this is meant to be a complaint, because you'll see about 80% of the game, and I'm totally happy with that. This is just sort of like a heads up that, you know, if you're 5'2", unless you just really want to be in there, I probably wouldn't get standing room.
Right. Splurge for seats if you can.
But if you can get in there, it's one way to do it. And it was a great experience. But yeah, you've got that such a short top to bottom window to see the action. And as long as everybody's seated, as I can't find my words, then you're fine.
Here's your words, Kurt.
Yep. This is where I need Andy jump in, bail me out. But it was so fun, and I loved it. I was so happy to be there that you could easily get stuck on like annoying people or annoying this or drunk people this or whatever. But I was just so happy to be there that none of that bothered me, which is rare for me because everything bothers me.
That's true. It was. going to this game did mean leaving your living room.
It did, and that was hard.
You called the Ricketts to see if they could work something out, but it just couldn't make it work. So this was your first playoff game at Wrigley, and so I want to ask you what you think about the video boards, walk-up music, everything that is quote-unquote new Wrigley. What did you think about that in that type of environment?
Well, that's the funny thing. That's the other thing about standing room. I never once saw the video board except when we first got in. We went down close to see the bullpen guys doing their like soft toss on the outfield. That's the only time I even saw the video board. And that's actually another frustration, is that they've got all those TVs in the 200 level, but they didn't. What's on the video board, they didn't show on those. They showed the MLB Network broadcast, and then when that was at commercial, they showed their own commercials. So I can't really comment on the video board, because that was really frustrating, because they showed those like pump up videos and I couldn't see it. I could just hear the music, and I was like, oh man, like I want to see that. So I can't really comment on that. But for the most part, I'm a fan of the video boards, and not being able to see them actually felt like a loss. So maybe that's something that
yeah,
I couldn't see them and I really wanted to.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think over the years, I would say years ago, if you've been listening to our podcast for a long time, I think we've opposed, early on, we opposed walk-up music. I think we kind of ridiculed teams that use it and stuff like that. But I'll say it just adds to the environment. It makes it fun. People were dancing. It was, and you can be a baseball purist, and that's fine. I understand that point of view. But at the same time, like, this is an incredibly fun team. This has been an amazingly fun season, and it was just fun to be there, and it was a party, but not a party like the reputation that Wrigley has. It was a party of, we love this team, we love baseball, and we're here to have fun. And that's just, I love, I think it adds to it a lot, and it can... And, you know, that's going to be weird when the Cubs don't have a good team, because that will eventually happen. And it's going to seem forced, and it's going to seem, you know, it just won't fit. But I think right now, like, you know, when Rizzo walks up to that intoxicated song, and everybody, the whole place is hopping, the whole place is loud, and it's just, it's fun. And I think, you know, you take that away, and... It's kind of funny because it's like, you know what? Wrigley was kind of a graveyard before. I mean, and I love the tradition of, you know, the organ music. I love that. Yep. You know, I'm not down on it, and I'm not down on that memory, but it's like, this just, I don't know if it's like perfect timing because of the vibe of this team or what, but I mean, it's just, I think it really adds to it. I was talking with Bob today, Bob from Moline, and he mentioned that he feels like this team is a lot different than Cubs playoff teams of the past, just because it seems like they feed, it feeds off the energy of the crowd, but not in the way that former teams maybe have, you know, like I think before, and this, again, just could be because of that whole vibe that Wrigley has right now, that energetic, positive, exciting vibe, where I think the players feed off that. But if you think about how players fed off the crowd before, they fed off the nervousness, the waiting for the other shoe to drop. That was what, it's almost like the video boards and the music and everything have changed the mood inside the ballpark. I think that, I mean, I think there's other things to credit for that, I guess, you know, like just the team in general, how it's constructed, and the from the front office and ownership down to the role players. I mean, everything's totally different. But, you know, this team doesn't care about 108 years. They don't care about hexes, curses, whatever. Look at game 6 of the NLDS or the NLCS in 03. We know what happened there. We don't need to review it. But compare that to this game. You know, and an example of that is Chris Bryant had, and Bob pointed this out to me, and it's so funny because he said, you know, Bryant had two errors in the same play. And, you know, on one hand, that could have opened the door for the Giants to work their way back into it. But the Cubs played level-headed and shut the door. And it was so funny because I thought, like, man, that was something that, like, I didn't really think about it, but I was like, yeah, that is a play that, like, if that would have happened before, it would have been like, oh, here we go. This is how it starts. That thought did not even cross my mind. It did not even cross my mind that, like, that could hurt the game, that could hurt anything. And I just think it's just the entire vibe of Wrigley that's changed. And I think it's everything. It's fans, players, just the environment, everything's different. And it just feels like that is not a place right now where it's not a breeding ground for that. Oh no, here we go. It's just, it's not there. I didn't sense it at all yesterday. Did you sense it any bit?
No, I don't think so. I think it felt super positive. And of course there was frustration after that play, but for the most part, it sort of ended there. He thought, oh, well, like you said, shut the door, and people moved on pretty quickly. It was, I don't remember feeling any of that nervousness other than the sort of the Hendricks injury. That was the only time when I got that feeling, but it didn't last long.
Right. Well, okay, so another instance of that is Contreras getting called for catcher's interference. When that happened, that put two on with one out, and that could be something where we'd be like, oh, of course, it's a catcher's interference. That's what leads to the downfall of the 2016 Cubs. But there's just, it wasn't even there. It didn't even cross my mind. It was just like, okay, how are they going to respond? And you look at how they responded in game one with the leadoff batter getting on, what, the first three or four innings. They had base runners. The Giants had base runners. And the Cubs just shut them down. And that's what happened here. I mean, there were two on, one out, and Hendricks induces a ground ball for a double play. And it just feels like the team in general, they treat these games like a regular season. They don't act like it's a super pressure-filled situation. They're so young and yet look like veterans out there. They don't look wide-eyed, and they're not playing tight. And, you know, think about it. I mentioned this maybe a few weeks ago, but for basically everyone but Contreras, you know, all these younger guys except for Contreras, this is their fourth playoff series, if you count the wild card game last year as a series. So Addison Russell is, what, 22? And here we are in the NLDS of his second season, and it's his fourth series. And I really paid attention to the Cubs players' body language and everything before the game when they were warming up and stuff, and they looked so loose. I mean, just so relaxed. And it didn't look like they didn't understand the seriousness of the situation, but they just looked extremely comfortable.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, another point of that is I think some people are nervous about how Hendricks might be in this situation, even though he did have a playoff start last year. But he got hit hard in the third when those two runs scored.
Yeah.
And then he came back in the fourth and went right back to what he always did. He got the couple of outs, and then, of course, that's when he got hit and left the game. But, you know, rebounded quickly after giving up those two runs, and no reason to believe he can't,
well,
you know, stay calm like he's always been and continue that.
And in a way, you kind of wonder if, like, in the long term, if this team continues to advance, maybe it was good because the Giants were hitting him, like you mentioned, they were hitting him pretty good, obviously solid contact on the ball that got hit right back to him. And maybe this was, you know, the bullpen stepped in, did their job, did an amazing job. And so maybe it's good for him to get this first one out of the way. Like, hey, you're the game two starter. That's a lot different than last year, the situation right. He was in. And basically, hey, go out there and try to get us four or five innings and we'll go from there. And so maybe this was just kind of a good little, you know, good way for him to kind of get his feet wet and playing a different role. But I do want to mention the bullpen. They pitched 5 1/3 innings, 0 runs, 2 hits, no walks, and 6 strikeouts. And I think out of all of them, the one that stood out to me was Carl Edwards Jr. He looked awesome, and it was great to see him come in, lock things down. I think it was like a 12-pitch inning, and just got it done and looked good, looked efficient. I felt really comfortable when he came out and started warming up from the mound because he was throwing strikes. And I think that as long as Carl Edwards Jr. is throwing strikes, we're going to be in good shape. It's his control that can kind of escape him at times. And so when I saw him throwing strikes, I knew things were going to be good. But and one other thing, while we're on the topic of pitching, Cubs pitching has 0 walks in the first two games of this series. And that's good when you can keep the other team off the base paths.
Yeah, that was one of those surprises that as we're walking back to the car, we're like, was there a walk in this game? Well, yeah, I think there was one, you know. So, yeah, then we realized they hadn't given up any. It was Smarja gave up one, but that was the only walk.
Yeah. Yep. Speaking of Samardzija, a short game for him. They jumped all over him, and it was beautiful.
As predicted.
It was beautiful.
By just about everybody.
Yeah, I and if you've listened to this, if you're new to this podcast, I'm a huge Jeff Samardzija fan. I'm a Notre Dame fan, so I've liked him since, you know, was wide receiver for Notre Dame. I've always liked him. However, I didn't do it, but I came so close to screaming, "Samardzija, you suck," because I still really like him, but when he was out there, I was just like, dude, you are going to get lit up. And especially when I was watching him throw, I was like, this guy's totally hittable. And then they started jumping on him. And I was just, but I will say, like, you know, when we saw Samardzija with the Cubs, we saw him kind of get amped up overthrow and just kind of, I don't know, let the situation kind of get to him, and he would get too hyped up. And his body language and how he reacted when things were going poorly, I thought were really good. Like, I kind of thought, like, if Bochy would have left him in there, I kind of felt like Samardzija would have gotten in a groove, and he probably would have been okay for a few innings after that, because his body language was pretty good. I mean, he didn't look frustrated. He didn't look like amped up or anything like that. He seemed really calm, but the Cubs were just, you know, getting the bat on it. And
yeah, I mean, really far away analysis from the side where I could see no movement on the pitches, but it just seemed like usual Samardzija, where like everybody knows Samardzija has great stuff, but then he goes out there and he doesn't pitch like he can. Like, he didn't throw a lot of off-speed stuff. He didn't throw his curveball much. And he just got hit because he's throwing a lot of fastballs for strikes. And
right.
The Cubs jumped all over him. And so, yeah, everybody knows Samardzija can throw, but he's not quite learned to pitch. And like, I love the fact that he just got revealed as kind of what he is. You look at his numbers, like, he's a 4-5 starter, and he wanted to be paid as the number two or one.
Well, but there's reasons for that. I mean,
there was,
let me defend him. He was, okay. I mean, he was, he he's arrogant. Of course they all are. If you think baseball players aren't arrogant, they all are.
He's at the top level he's the arrogance of baseball players.
Okay, I'll admit that. He's a special guy. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a huge Notre Dame fan, but I understand that there's some arrogance there too. So, he's got it from all directions. But the Cubs had him as their ace, and he pitched well in those couple of years. And I know that there's a lot of hatred about Samardzija with the things that he said. After trades and things like that. And I understand, I mean, as a Cubs fan, that was more interested in the long-term, situation of the team and knew how things were being strengthened for the long-term, I was in favor of it. Do I blame a guy like Samardzija for saying literally everyone that's good around me is getting traded? It's making our team worse. And let me look at my contract here. Oh yeah, I'm not going to be here when this team is good. I can understand a guy getting frustrated with that. And I think that
he had an offer from them to stick around.
Right. But I don't think you can expect, like, I don't think during a rebuild you can expect players to understand or agree with the rebuild mentality, because it is in their nature to win and to win now. And he probably looked around, saw some pieces that were, he thought, oh, we could, I mean, heck, there were so many Cubs fans that thought the same thing. And I was a huge Samardzija fan, but I was like, man, I don't, get rid of anybody you want, you know? So I don't know. I think there's a lot of hatred for Samardzija out there for those kind of comments. But I think that, I think guys like Anthony Rizzo would probably have said the same thing if he was in that situation. They don't care about rebuilding. They care about winning. And they want good teams surrounding them, and they want to win. And so, I don't know.
Yeah.
Now
we get to hate him because he's on the
right. Giants, exactly. So. And that's where I'm like, I like Samardzija, but man, last night it was it was the first time I've actively and like passionately rooted against him. And I saw a little bit of what everybody else saw. It's like, look at that idiot out there with his hair and fucking facial hair. I hate that guy. You know? And then
this dude could be making like $17 million as the number four starter. He could be our lackey and be making bank. And now he's with the Giants, and I don't know what he's making there.
I'm sure he's doing okay for himself.
Oh yeah, money wise he's fine, but he could be on this team instead of that one.
Yeah, I just I don't know. Players say things, and so it doesn't really. I typically don't pay a lot of attention to that type of stuff. I just know that a lot of people don't like the things that he said, but I don't know. It's what happens. So it was great to beat up on him. And it was just, I think it was especially like, what's the word I'm trying to find here? It was, especially sweet considering the things that he had said and considering the him being against the rebuild. And, you know, it was just like, I don't know. What the only thing that would have made it better is if Russell would have hit a home run off of him.
Yes.
Which, if you listen to our the voicemails after our last episode, there is an amazing voicemail there from Sean O'Hare. You should listen to it on that very topic. But, yeah, another thing I thought was pretty awesome about the game was that three of the five runs that the Cubs scored were from Cubs pitchers. Hendricks had two RBIs and or RBI, and Travis Wood hit a home run. So,
yeah,
pretty. That's the difference in the game right there. They won by three, and three of the runs were scored by Cubs pitching.
Yeah, it's it's very unexpectedly. I mean, not as unexpectedly from Wood, but certainly that Hendricks hit got people pretty fired up.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Before we move on, I don't know. Do we want to get into our hobby talk? Do we want to touch this topic?
I think we need to, but maybe we don't dwell on it.
Okay, I'm with that.
Because let's face it, that everybody's talked about this already.
My former favorite player to my current favorite player,
which you will probably defend in equal fashion, as you did in the car last night. But you know, when he hit the home run, he barely hit it and he posed. So we forgave him because it went out. But then last night, you know, he did the whole thing and then he gets sort of thrown out at second. And I think if we leave that behind, I just want to talk about the fact that he didn't run out of the box. He didn't respect 90, as Joe says, and it cost him. But I'm also going to recognize that doesn't make me hate Javi. That makes me realize he made a mistake, and I hope he gets it. I hope he knows it, and I hope somebody, either one of the veterans or Joe Madden himself, talked to Javi and said, "Look, don't do it again." That's all. That's the end of the story.
Well, let me jump in.
Next time that happens, run.
Right. Let me jump in here. So this is from I think this was maybe a Carrie Muscat piece that she wrote today. She quoted Madden and Baez in this. So the quote from Madden is, "I gave him a fist pump and looked at him in the eye, and he knew what that was all about. For me, it's very dangerous as a manager or coach to coach instinct and whatever this guy has that nobody else has out of him, which I don't want to do. I never want to subtract from this guy. I wanted to take what he has and harness it a little bit and understand situations to the point where he's not going to make that mistake. And it's all about him and what he's thinking at that moment. We just covered that." And then Baez said, "Next time, no matter how hard I hit it, I'm going to get out of the box as soon as I can. If the ball is going, I'm going to run hard." So,
yeah.
And I get it. You're right. That it's like, that's kind of what he is. I mean, that doesn't sound right. What makes him so good is also that confidence. Like, you have to have an insane amount of confidence to make some of those defensive plays that he makes because there are times, you know, where he will barehand a ball and you think, just eat it. Don't throw it. You're going to throw it away. And he makes an incredible throw to first and nails the runner. And so, and his tags, you know, they're just like, if the ball is like 5 feet over your head, maybe you don't try to still make the tag. No, he's going to, and he's going to tag the guy out. I mean, it's that confidence that gives him the swagger that leads to, I mean, it's just like, it's a total package, like Joe Madden says. And I think that is something that's easily coached out of him. And I think here's the way I look at it. So I have a friend that's a Giants fan. He lives in the Bay Area. And I know that the Giants had things to say about Baez after he kind of pimped the first one. And then last night I got a text in the middle of the game from my friend out there. It's just like, you know, he needs to respect the game, blah, blah, blah. And I could not disagree. Like, I hate that saying, respect the game, because I think, I don't know. It's an old white guy thing to say, respect the game, because what makes, there's a new breed in a new breed of baseball, I guess. And we see it with Joey Bats and all this kind of stuff. And you know what, though? Like, I'm okay with it. And, Kurt, we talked about this last night, that years ago we probably would have fallen into that camp, and we did fall into that camp. But I think that I see that this is the stuff that makes baseball fun, and this is what is going to keep my daughter's generation interested in a game that is at a disadvantage just because of the way, of what the game is. It moves so slow. There are so many things going against baseball when it comes to younger generations and their attention spans and what they find entertaining and everything. And I think we need that kind of stuff. Now, at the same time, like, I don't think that it should, you know, do it on a home run. Don't do it on a hit that bounces off the wall. And I think, I think that Baez, you know, if you saw, like, after they tried to hit him or gave him a warning pitch, he kind of nodded his head like,
I get it.
That was coming. And that's fine. But you know what? Here's kind of the way that here's my opinion on the Giants. Worry about you're down two games to nothing. You don't need to police whether or not a guy got thrown out at second. Leave that up to his manager and leave that up to his teammates. You don't need to worry about what he's doing. You need to worry about the fact you're down two games to nothing. And if you're too worried about Javier Baez, yes. I mean, if you're too worried about the fact that he didn't run hard, dude, you need to thank him for not running hard.
Right.
And you would want everybody to pimp it coming out of the box because it's going to slow him down. It just doesn't, it really makes no sense to me. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous to throw at a player. First off, ever. I don't like warning pitches. Pitches thrown inside. I don't like it when people get plunked on purpose. I think it's stupid. I just don't like it. And I think it's absolutely ridiculous to do it in the playoffs. I think it's so, I think it's irresponsible. Yeah. I mean, that
when
is,
you're down,
that is
a, you don't put a guy on first for any reason.
Well, not even that. You like, that is less, I mean, hitting someone with a baseball, you know, thrown in the mid 90s, that I think is more disrespectful to the game than pimping, you know, not running out of the box. I don't know. That's too much of a hot take there. I apologize. But like,
no, I actually totally agree with you on it. And I should clarify too that I'm not, like you said, I'm not against the bat flipping and the showmanship. I like it. My take on this is it was a bad baseball play.
Right.
Javi needed to run, and that's what I don't like about it.
Yes.
And so that's what I'm coming down on, not his showmanship. But the reality is he shouldn't have done it there. And I think he learned his lesson. And I love what Madden said, actually. And that's the first I had heard it when you read it. But I love the sort of like the dad look, you know, that time you came home too late in high school.
Right.
And your dad was there and he gave you the look and he didn't say anything. But you're like, oh, man.
Right.
And you never did it again. It's that. That's what Madden just did. And I think that's perfect.
Right.
And that's what makes him so great that he like he said, he doesn't want to take anything away from Javi. He doesn't want to like try to box him in. And I think we won't see that again. If we do, then there may be a problem.
I don't think we will, because Javi said, I mean, Javi knows he made a mistake. I mean, he does. And and that's part of growing. That's part of having a young team, is they're going to make mistakes like that. But, you know, I'm looking in the chat right here. Michael says, I hit a guy on purpose when I was 23 because they were up 12. And a guy stole second. And then he said he didn't feel too good about that afterwards. And like, okay, so that's a thing. Like, they're up 12 and you steal a base. Like, I can kind of understand, like, you know, plunking a guy for something like that. But like, I just think in the playoffs, I just don't understand. Like, go ahead, Giants. Go ahead and get obsessed. Go ahead and let your media talk about how much you guys hate Javier Baez. And, you know, like my friend that texted me, yeah, that's definitely what you should be concerned about right now. Not the fact that your team can't hit the ball.
But the flip side is, though, when you're down 0-2, those are the things you start to pick on because you're mad. You know,
right?
You're looking
right,
for something just to get fired up about, and sometimes that's how it comes.
And you know what?
And then the flip side is like the people hating on him from San Francisco. Again, these little battles are good for the game. These best series come when people hate each other, or when the teams respectfully hate each other. And I think that, you know, I don't agree with what Javi did, but when these little things flare up, it makes for good drama and good baseball.
Right. They were mad. They were mad about, you know, him pimping the home run on Friday night. And it's like, man, where the heck was I going with that? I got some, again, for the second episode in a row, I'm eating and drinking nothing. And I got something stuck in my throat and it derailed my thoughts. But, oh shoot. I don't know what I was going to say, but, I just think like, they have other things to worry about. The Giants do. And, oh, I know what I was going to say is I'm all for, like, I let other teams hate us. I like bring it on. Hate us. Go ahead and hate us because we're good, and hate us because we're cocky. I don't care. Hate us. Good. I would much rather other teams hate us than us be the laughing stock like we were a couple of years ago. And I mean, this team plays hard. They for being as young as a team is, the team is, they made very few mistakes like Javier did last night. That happened very few times this season. This is not like an issue with this team. It's not an issue with him. He's having a great, what is he, 3-for-6, I think, in the postseason. Yeah. He's playing great. He's getting to play every day now. He looks like he's going to really, he really fits in with this team. It's just, he had some confidence, and that's what he did. He understood that it was a mistake, and I don't think we'll see it again. And if other teams want to hate us for that, then fine. And if, you know, just like if the Rangers want to hate Joey Bats because he hit a home run and flipped his bat, then fine. It just makes you look dumb. And there's no doubt.
Well, this coming from the Notre Dame fan, you're used to being hated. Some of us, it's a little newer, you know. Right. Those of us who've been, you know, Illini fans for most of our life. Other than like 05 basketball.
Oh, no.
We're not used to being hated.
When I was in junior high, I hated Jeff George.
Wow. That was a long time ago.
That's about all I have to say about the game.
Yeah, I agree. Just
45 minutes later. I guess that's all.
Yeah, we were going to talk about the hobby thing that much, but I think it was a good topic. I think it gets your blood flowing, and I think that's why we should have spent that time on it.
Yeah. Okay, so let's look ahead to game 3. Kurt, so let's just kind of look at, you know, how the pitchers match up against the other teams. Why don't you start us off with Bumgarner?
You mean Baumgartner?
Yeah. We could almost do like a bonus episode of this is kind of a tradition of mine, is like I don't listen that much to AM sports talk radio, but when I leave games, I like to turn it on just to kind of remind myself of how awful people are. And lots of callers in talking about Baumgartner, and I also really enjoyed the guys that felt like the Cubs are really at a disadvantage as the number one seed, and Major League Baseball needs to do more to give the Cubs the advantage as the number one seed. And his idea was that the number one seed in the NLDS, they get to host all 5 games.
Yes, straight up home field advantage, like all the way. Yeah, that was pretty impressive. Oh man, but anyways, back to Baumgartner. I'm really just gonna throw out some stats. You all know how good he is. You've probably watched the wild card game, but I'll give you a little evidence to reinforce what we already know. For the season, he was 15-9 with a 2.74 ERA, and he is insanely durable. He started 30 plus games and thrown 200 plus innings every year since 2011. That was the first year he did it. And this year he had career highs in both of those with 34 starts and 226.2 innings. Only Scherzer had more innings. So the guy his arm is just invincible, at least to this point. He's only 27, and he's thrown I mean, he's, I'm going to go back a little bit and talk about his starts this year versus the Cubs. He had a May 22nd start against the Cubs in San Francisco. He pitched 7 2/3, gave up 3 hits and no runs. And then the Giants won that game 1-0. And then another start at Wrigley on September 3rd. And, you know, that was against Arrieta. So there's our sort of preview matchup.
Yeah.
And I won't go into Arrieta's numbers because you're going to cover that. But Baumgartner, Rowan Gardner pitched, 6 innings in that game, gave up 5 hits and just 2 runs, but he did struck out 10. And I think another important note from that game is that Contreras was 2-for-4. I assume Miggy's going to start tomorrow, but Miggy's lefty. And left-handed hitters just hit just 178 off of him versus 220 for righties. I mean, his splits are pretty big. And he allowed just 4 home runs against lefties and 22 to righties. Big number of at-bats difference there. But still, he's really good against lefties. And so even though you probably want Miggy catching Arrieta, both Ross and Contreras have hits against Baumgartner this year. So that might be something to consider.
Well, and while you're on the topic of the lineup, I mean, Joe said something to the media today about mixing things up. I think this could be a game where Jason Hayward is not starting in right field. And mm-hmm. perhaps we see Chris Bryant in right and Soler in left, maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you want to stack it with as many righties as you can get in there. Certainly you don't want to give up Hayward's glove, but yeah, Hayward against Baumgartner probably isn't going to look too pretty.
Well, and you can always bring him in later. I mean, you know, that September 3rd game, he was pulled after 6 innings because he had thrown 103 pitches. You get 10 strikeouts, you're going to throw a lot of pitches, so.
And we won't see him pulled for anything if he strikes out 10 in this game.
But they may need him for game 5.
That's true. But like I said, he's insanely durable. I mean, we saw what he did in 14 when he pitched. So he pitched 52 2/3 innings in the 2014 playoffs, gave up just 6 earned runs. And that was when he had the complete game, was it? Or was it? Yeah, I think it was a complete game. And then he pitched 5 innings of relief.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, the guy can throw on short rest. He's really, really good, almost perfect in elimination games like he was in the wild card game. And this is, of course, elimination game. So all that said, I'm still not that worried. Cubs are still favored by 538, slightly. And, you know, I think the Cubs can get to him because he did just pitch a complete game. And
right.
If they can stack it with righties and do a little bit of damage, hopefully it's a low run affair. I think it will be.
Right.
And like they beat Cueto, I think they can do it again.
Yeah, let me kind of give some stats to give Cubs fans a little bit of confidence, I guess, or some hope in facing Baumgartner. In the last 2 weeks of the season, he had a 5.40 ERA. And in the last 28 days of the season, he had a 4.09 ERA. So, as you mentioned, he kind of takes things to a different level in the playoffs, which we saw him do in the wild card game. But I don't know. I mean, I think.
Well, his streak is currently at 23 scoreless postseason innings, and I think that ends tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, maybe it goes a few more,
right.
But it doesn't go 9 more. I think the Cubs will get to him at some point.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, we'll share our predictions here at the end. But so let's look at Arrieta versus the Giants. Arrieta faced the Giants twice this year. And I could have gone back. I didn't really want to include last year's stats because I think 2015 Arrieta was just a otherworldly. I think that 2016 Arrieta's numbers are, even though it's a smaller sample, I think it's going to be more representative of what we could see. So he faced the Giants twice. May 20th, he went 7 innings and gave up 1 run on 4 hits. He struck out 8 and walked 2. And then he faced him on September 3rd in that same game against Baumgartner. And he gave up 3 runs on 4 hits. Struck out 7 and walked 2. So another good game, but the Cubs lost that game 3-2. Looking at individual Giants hitters and their careers against Arrieta, some of them have decent numbers against Arrieta. Angel Pagan is 5-for-11 against Arrieta. And the rest that have good numbers are such small sample sizes, you can't really glean anything from them. Joe Panic is 2-for-5. Eduardo Nunez is 3-for-8. Buster Posey, get this, Buster Posey, 1-for-15. Brandon Crawford is 1-for-13. And Brandon Belt is 0-for-10 with 7 strikeouts. So, and
yeah.
The Giants' career OPS against Arrieta is 486. And they are slugging 218.
Whoa. That's insanely low.
Yeah.
And Michael pointed out in the chat, too, Jake loves to pitch in California.
Yeah.
He has, well, these are Michael's stats. I'm going to assume he's right, but 0.2 in his last 6 starts in California, 0.2 ERA, 45 innings pitched,
just
15 hits allowed, 1 earned run, 9 walks and 44 strikouts, no home runs.
That's insane.
I mean, he actually has been insanely good in California. He's also been really good on the road. And so I don't know. I think it just lines up so perfectly that we were able to get Lester, and then Hendricks. Of course, we didn't expect this kind of start out of Hendricks, but they got the win, and now you get Arrieta in game 3 on the road. And
yeah, I think Arrieta,
forget Baumgartner. I mean,
right.
The Cubs got a pretty strong hand to play here. So
yeah, I think that Arrieta could have it would not surprise me at all to see a 2015 second half 2015 performance out of him. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, not at all.
I mean, I think
he really gets up for these games, and I think he's gonna be really good.
Well, and he hasn't, you know, we saw him kind of fall apart a little bit in the postseason last year, but he didn't pitch as many innings this year, and I just think that he's in a better spot, maybe than he was a year ago, and I think that there was a lot of pressure on there is way less pressure on him this year than there was last year. He's a number 3 right now. And last year he was the number 1. He had to go in, win that elimination game, and almost like keep up what he had been doing in the second half of 2015. And 2016 has been kind of more of a normal season for him. And I just think there's less pressure, and he can just go out and do his thing.
Yeah, for sure.
So on our way out here, Kurt, do you want to give your prediction on the game?
Okay, all right. So
I do, but before you give yours though, I do want to give my daughter little shout out here, because so we were eating before we went into the game. I Snapchatted it, and I was like, you know, I asked her what the final score was going to be, and she said 5-2 Cubs. And in the fourth inning or fifth inning, it was 5-2, and she's like, I was right, it's going to be 5-2. And I was like, oh, they're going to score more than that, you know. Sure enough, she was right, 5-2. I should have. She's in bed now. I should have brought her on here to give her prediction.
She could do a little Javi, little bat flip pimping on her prediction.
Right, exactly.
All right. So my game 3 prediction. Of course, this is going to be a 1-run game because it's the Cubs and Giants. So I've got Jake going 6. He gives up 5 hits, but just 2 runs. Really similar line to the last time they faced off. With Baumgartner, and instead the score flips. The Cubs win 3-2. And like you said, Jake's really good, but he only goes 6 because the bullpen's so good. They got the day off today, and you're able to go to him again, and they're the lights out again.
Wow. Okay. So my prediction was Cubs 3-2. The same thing.
There you go.
And before I gave a lot of specifics on my prediction. And in a way, I was kind of, you know, I said Baez was going to be a hero, and he was. I think the Cubs win 3-2, and I think that I think Jake hits a home run.
He did get a hit off of Baumgartner in that game in September, so I think it's possible.
Okay, I'm going to say he hits a home run, or he hits a double to the wall, off the wall, like at the base of the wall.
And he just stands there. He never moves from the batter's box.
All right. So
I hope that's true. And I don't know. I think a lot of people go into this series like freaked out a little bit, and I go into the series thinking like, yeah, this is a great matchup, and
yep.
I'm not discounting how good Bumgarner is, but I think the Cubs have as good or better guy out there, especially yeah. with the offense they have.
I don't know if I could really hang with. I don't know if I'm going to say as good or better, but I think tomorrow night he could be. I think tomorrow night he could be better.
I think the potential is as good. Okay. That's what I'm saying. If last year's second half Jake of last year shows up, which I
yeah, there's nobody better.
Well, then we're good to go.
Yeah. All right, so we will play some voicemails here on our way out. Stick around for those. Again, I loved Sean O'Hare's voicemail in our last episode. If you need to, just go back and listen to it. It's really funny. It's basically a story, fiction, based around
fan fiction.
It's Nick Vlahos fan fiction. So if that sounds appealing to you, you need to go back and listen to it. But with our voicemail line here, anytime you have any thoughts on the Cubs that you want to share, call our voicemail line. You can do it from within our free IVMV app. You can just tap contact the show and then call the show, or you can call 309-517-0624. That's 309-517-0624. If you're watching a game, if you want to predict the score to the next game, if you just want to share your thoughts on any plays or topics, anything at all, anytime, just leave a voicemail. I enjoy getting those here in the postseason and playing them. And as far as the Game 3 post-game show goes, we haven't really talked about that, Kurt. Yeah. I'm not sure what we're going to do. It's just going to be so late. The game starts at 8:30 or 8:45, something like that. Playoff games can go slow. I think it really just kind of depends on the game and when it finishes and how exciting the result is. So, I would say, I couldn't really, I'm not going to commit to a post game show tomorrow night.
Yeah, that's fair considering I'll have to be at work.
Yeah.
Shortly after.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it really just does depend on the game, and it might be if it's a super exciting game, maybe we just jump on for like 15 minutes or something.
Yeah.
We'll let you know. So to know about, or to find out about our live post game shows, follow us on Twitter. We're at IVMV. Our Facebook page is IVMV.com/Facebook. If you have our free app, if you have the iOS app, I send push notifications when we're going live. So you know, just make sure you're getting push notifications from us, and you will see those. Thank you for listening to this episode. Thanks to all of our Patreon supporters. If you recently found us, we've been podcasting on the Cubs for 8 years now, 8 seasons. We've done almost 450 episodes. If you appreciate what we're doing, then head to patreon.com/IVMV. You can support us for as little as $1 a month, and it goes up to as much, whatever you want it. There's perks at every level. I have more perks that are going out on Tuesday. Kids don't have school tomorrow, so I'm putting them to work. They're going to help me package up more stuff. No school? You're working for IVMV today, kids.
Yeah.
So we do have new Patreon contributors to thank, though. Clark in Riceville, Iowa. You know where Riceville is, Kurt?
I don't.
I've never heard of it.
No. I might check the Google on that one.
Yeah. So Riceville, Iowa, Clark. Kevin in Scarsdale, New York. Mark in Granville, Michigan. Jeff and Sean did not provide their locations. I don't know where they live. Rafael in Brazil. Steven in London, England. So two international listeners. Thanks a lot, Rafael and Steven. Jeff from Oklahoma. Met up with him last week. Had some pizza. And Elise from Turlock, California. So again, if you would like to join these folks and all the others that help us keep this show going, you can go to patreon.com/IVMV. That's patreon.com/IVMV. And that does it for this episode. Again, thank you for listening. Let's hope the Cubs can put away the Giants on Monday night. And like I said, we may have a post-game show Monday night. Might have to wait till Tuesday. We will let you know. And until then, go Cubs.
100-year famine, you don't know. Makes a hunger like no other.
Hey guys, this is Sam from Janesville, Wisconsin. I just wanted to point something out that I haven't heard anyone talk about yet, and that was the Silver's play where he allowed to get the ball to get past him. If you remember, Posey was on first base with two away, and just before he rounded second base, he slowed up, but he forgot how many outs there were, and I think if he had been fussing it on contact, there would have been, at the very least, a play at the plate. So I thought that was a pretty big play. As it turns out, it was a one-run game, so I think you could call that a turning point. It had a turning point feel to it. Thanks, guys.
Hey, this is Sean from Iowa. Before I give you my prediction, pardon me, I just wanted to put it out there to IDMV folks in Iowa. There's an open house at Principal Park in Des Moines tomorrow night, Monday night, whenever this comes out. I don't know. But because of goofy property rights laws, the Iowa Cubs can't advertise it, but they'll have the game on the big board. So if you want to go to a stadium and watch game three, you know, it's kind of cool. So I'll be there. Let me know. We'll do an IBMV meetup. Cool. Anywho, my prediction. My prediction is Bumgarner misses the strike zone barely on the first batter, glares at the umpire, and the umpire commits a cardinal sin of looking at Bumgarner, and he gets upset, and then he pitches like crap even more, a few more hits, he's getting more upset, and then he can't pitch, and he misses a few more calls, and he gets worse and worse, and it's the most beautiful spiral downward ever. And yeah, the Cubs destroy him, and they all look at him. Every walk, every hit, they all just look at him as they go to the base. And he's a very angry young man, and he has to think about it all winter long. So, yeah, that's my prediction for tomorrow night. Go Cubs, go. Yay, I don't know what else to say. I'm trying to end it. I don't know. Goodbye.
Hey, guys, this is Ben in Santa Cruz, California, and I just wanted to call and let you know that I think the Cubs are going to sweep this series. I know it's easy to predict now that we saw the win last night, thanks to Javi, but I was meaning to call yesterday, and I just want to let you know, I think they're going to win 3 in a row. When it's all said and done, I think Addison Russell is going to be the MVP of this season. I got a good feeling about it, and I think it's going to happen. This is the year. Go Cubs!